Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olifier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And once again, we are back with a tasting, and this week it's a red from Paarl. And for a change, I'm going to introduce the wine before I introduce our guests. It's called the Dry Land Collection. It's from Perdeberg, and it's a 2011 Shiraz. With me in the Joburg studio, I'm delighted to welcome back Malcolm McDonald from Tersos. Malcolm, great to have you back.
Great to be here.
And I know you're partial to the odd red, so I hope you're enjoying this. And of course, down in the Cape, we have our food and wine guru, award-winning author, foodie, winey, all sorts of wonderful gastronomic stuff, Michael Olifier. Michael, great to chat to you again.
John, hello. Yeah, this is going to be fun.
Tell us about this Shiraz. Why did you choose it, Michael?
John, Perdeberg Winery is a well-established winery in the Paarl region. They call themselves the home of Chenin Blanc. They make excellent Pinotage and a whole range of other wines. And in August last year, they launched this dry land collection. One of the big features of that area is dry land vineyards. By dry land, I mean they're not irrigated. So what you land up with on the vine is bunches with very tiny grapes on them. And that means more skin to juice once you get them into the cellar and get them starting fermenting. So what you have is greater flavor and greater color as well. And because of the way the winemaking techniques which are applied by Albertus Lohr, the cellar master, and Rian Moller, who makes the red wines there, they're wines which have, the reds particularly, very soft tannins, and just this generosity of berries. And in the case of this Shiraz, if you look at it in the glass, it's got a wonderful deep sort of ruby red color and up to sort of purpley garnet around the edges. And you get your nose into it and everything that is Shiraz is there. You've got that lovely berries, the red and black berries, the ripe plums, wonderful spice. A bit of a grind of white pepper there. And of course, from the oak maturation, you've got that lovely support and that sort of undertow of oak. Nice long flavor, soft tannins. I really think this is a part of a great collection, but this Shiraz is yummy stuff.
Well, let's find out what Malcolm makes of it. Malcolm, you enjoying this 2011 Shiraz?
So far, two or three sips, lots of flavor, lots of different things to explore in there, I think. I mean, I heard you reading some of them off a little bit earlier, and Michael was mentioning some of them. There's lots of things to find in that flavor, and so that's quite enjoyable.
Yeah, I must say, I found the back label on this bottle, Michael, a little flowery. They talk about berries, Turkish delight, chocolates, cloves, and vanilla. But I suppose the taste of a wine is what you make of it, and people do tend to try to conjure up familiar tastes to help identify and communicate. I know you do that a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, you want to find points that people recognize. I mean, I do quite a lot of wine talking to students, and I always say to them, just tell me what you find in the wine. And, you know, people will for a red wine, they'll say, well, I can taste Mari biscuits, I can taste cashew nuts, but you know you've got the sort of aromatics of the Shiraz in the sort of Turkish delight comment, and of course the spice, which is so classical of a good Shiraz.
Well, I must say I am enjoying this. We've probably got it at about the temperature that I think most people would serve it at. I have to say it's maybe a little warm for me. But certainly it's a nice full-bodied wine. I could certainly sip away at this, but as you know, Michael, I always like to rack your brains on food and wine combinations. What would you serve up to eat if you had this in the glass beside your plate?
I think you could go the sort of fruity, spicy, bride pork ribs route. because it would work well. That sort of fruitiness would work well with the fruitiness in the wine. You could also go if you had a venison fillet. You could marinate that in some olive oil, a bit of Worcester sauce, or something, and then just pop it on the braai and cook it that way, and then serve it very, very simply, just maybe with some berries or a little sort of a devilly kind of sauce. Then, you know, at the other end of the meal, this would happily take on a rich chocolate cake or a chocolate mousse. Interesting, yesterday I was doing a tasting for a function that's coming up on Sunday, and I had to match wines to 15 different bakes, and of the 15, 12 of them were sweet, and a carrot cake was in the lineup, and I took a fork and brought it up, and as I brought it up to my nose, the spice was there, and I said to the winemaker, we've got to have Shiraz for this, and he rushed off and opened a bottle of Shiraz, and the Shiraz and the carrot cake worked perfectly together.
Well, I don't often need an excuse to eat carrot cake, but it's jolly good. Every time I load up on Shiraz, I shall also load up on carrot cake, and we'll see what that does to my figure. I was thinking maybe cheese. Cheese would go well with this, a nice cheese platter.
Absolutely. A nice one. Those nice creamy dolce latte type blue cheeses would be stunning.
Mm, Malcolm, what would you like to eat alongside this?
Maybe even gorgonzola would work with this. It's got so much flavor in this bit of wine that almost nothing's going to overpower it. But to complement it, I'd agree with a lot of the things that Michael said. I really like the idea of some nice sticky sweet ribs with this. I think that would be about perfect right now. So thinking about lunchtime, some ribs with a glass of Shiraz, just about right.
And of course the venison, particularly if the venison is served with maybe a slightly fruity sauce of some sort or glaze. Yeah, Michael. Before we go, I was quite surprised that I got more reaction to a photo which I posted on Facebook and Twitter recently of a glass of wine than I'd had on anything for a long time. I'll give you the context. You may even have seen it. I was at the Virgin Active Gym, the Virgin Classic Health Club, as they call it, in Melrose Arch. And I have to say, it was a Friday afternoon. I'd already done my exercise for the week, the previous week. So I was just sitting there doing a bit of reading. And they have now started serving beer and wine at this gym. So I ordered a glass of red. And I have to say, it wasn't entirely to my taste, and I thought it was served a bit warm. So I asked for some ice with it, and the picture I posted had the glass of wine and a little ice bucket alongside. And so many people said to me, red wine with ice, what on earth are you doing? But I know we've discussed this before. Please tell people that if I want to put a few ice cubes in my red wine when it's hot, and even if it's not a particularly nice wine and I just want to slightly dilute it, I am allowed to.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, you could put Coke in your red wine if you wanted to. The thing is that you have to do what's enjoyable for you. If you an occasion like that where you've got a glass of house wine and you just think, oh, this would actually be great, a little bit cooler, why not put some ice cubes in? I mean, you're not going to do that to a 267 rand bottle of 25-year-old Cabernet from some estate in Stellenbosch. You're going to make sure that it's the right temperature before you drink it. But absolutely, I mean, I'm a great proponent of putting ice in wine, and I might add a good splash of soda on a summer day too.
Malcolm, are you sneering or nodding in approval?
I think everyone can enjoy whatever it is that they enjoy when it comes to wine. I've not thought of putting soda in wine. I often am served red too warm. So yeah. I think it's probably just fine. I never have, but I think it's probably just fine to put some ice in something that's served too warm.
And as Michael said earlier, he sometimes dissolves cocaine in his red wine. I think that's what you said, isn't it?
That was Coca-Cola.
Oh, all right. Oh, all right. We'll prevent the drug squad from coming around and raiding the Olifia residence. Michael, one other question on serving of red wine, if I may. Aeration, decanting. I know that when I lived in Europe, sometimes if you went to a fancy restaurant, they would go through the whole ritual, and indeed I've encountered that in some classy or possibly pretentious restaurants here in South Africa as well. What's your advice? Is there any merit in decanting a red wine?
John, I think so. I think, you know, particularly with winemakers now perhaps not filtering their reds. Or, you know, they haven't perhaps racked it sufficiently. You're going to have a little bit of deposit, which is fine. I think that for me the merit of decanting a wine is the wine does improve as it stands in the glass, and I think it's the sort of exposure to air and. If I ever decant a wine, which doesn't happen that often, I tend rather to sort of chug it into the decanter so that it gets a lot of air going through it, which often gets rid of those sort of volatiles and just softens the wine up really nicely.
And just to go back to what you said, in case people weren't entirely clear, sometimes at the bottom of a bottle of red wine, and indeed I've even seen it occasionally in the bottom of white wines, you get crystals or some solid matter. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not going to kill you if you drink it, but it's just not particularly pleasant to be knocking back a liquid and suddenly have this chewy, hard bit of solid. So that's the traditional reason for decanting the wine, to take the pouring stuff out of the bottle and leave the sediment behind. But as you say, and I don't know if Malcolm has any thoughts on that, sometimes getting a bit of air through the wine can change its character for the better.
And also that's why people decant port into a decanter, because of that deposit. Just out of interest, those crystals that you sometimes get in a white wine, the Germans call them angel's tears. Those are tartrate crystals, and most winemakers would remove those by simply dropping the temperature of the wine, and then those tartrate crystals just crystallize out and form a couple of crystals at the bottom of the bottle.
Well, of course, Michael, when I was younger, my tartrate was 3 a night, but I'm getting a bit old these days. Malcolm, a final thought on decanting, aeration, and let's return to sober normality.
Yes, well, aerate is probably more where we should be at than a tartrate. But I actually do have a wine aerator.
Does it work?
I don't know. I think I can definitely taste the difference.
Yeah.
Whether it's better is probably a matter of opinion, but I certainly think you can probably find more space in the flavor. In audio, there's this thing called space in the sound, where you can actually find all the different components because there's space in the sound. Mm. And I think aerating it maybe puts a little bit more space in the flavor, if that's a term. I don't know what the correct term is.
Well, a final thought from you, Michael. Aerator, first of all, what is it and how do you rate an aerator?
Well, aerating is simply getting some air through the wine, and you get that by plugging it into a decanter. And sometimes if we open a red wine and want to drink it immediately, I plug it into the glass as well, just to get some air through it. Mm.
Excellent. And just that thought when you were mentioning that quite often you decant your port into a decanter, I far prefer decanting it into my stomach. I find most servings of port, particularly in restaurants, are pitifully small. I do understand that one mustn't overindulge if you're getting behind the wheel of a car, but some restaurants are just a little bit too mean in terms of servings of spirits and fortified wines.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. We will be back very soon with probably a bubbly. I think it's about time we had a bubbly. But for now, we have been quaffing and slurping the Dryland Collection 2011 Shiraz from Perdeberg, a winery in Paarl. Many thanks to our food and wine guru, Michael Olifier. Great to chat to you, Michael.
Thanks, John. Thank you so much.
And to the gentleman who's not only responsible for our technical wizardry in putting this podcast together, but I'm glad we could get you behind the microphone again and do a tasting with you. Malcolm McDonald from Tersos. Malcolm, great to chat to you again.
And likewise, thank you for inviting me for this lovely rig.
I'm John Fraser. This has been Divine Intervention.